Off the Record, the weekly KOTO public affairs show that offers you, the listener, an opportunity to hear in-depth conversations on community topics and issues that matter. As always, you are encouraged to join the conversation by calling 728-4333. Now here's your host.
Good evening, KOTO listeners. I'm Matt Hoist from the KOTO News team. Welcome to another installment of Off the Record. Tonight we are going to be talking about something that touches all of us, but that we often might not think about or notice, but is very important. That's mental health. We're going to talk about what it is, why it's important, and what we can all do to lead healthier lives when it comes to our mental health. And before we dive into that, though, with really just the wonderful collection of guests that we have tonight, I'm really excited for these conversations. I do want to kick off the hour and start with a brief moment of silence to remember and to think about all the people that our community has lost due to struggles with mental health, and a reminder of how important all these conversations really are. So a brief moment of silence. Thank you very much. I know there's a lot of people out there that are holding a lot of people in their thoughts and in their hearts. Anyway, to start our hour tonight, we are joined by two lovely guests in studio. I have with me Corinne Cavender, Behavioral Health Operations Coordinator with Tri-County Health Network. Corinne, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
Also joining us is Jenny Wheeler, a licensed clinical social worker with the Center for Mental Health. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Just to start off, I really want to ask both of you, how did you each get into mental and behavioral health work? Corinne, we can start with you.
Oh, interesting question, Matt. So I was actually brought to Telluride as an AmeriCorps VISTA for Tri-County, and I did marketing for them for a year. And then actually the month that I moved here, I had a friend die by suicide, and Tri-County does a lot of suicide prevention and mental health advocacy. So it kind of ended up being a perfect fit. So after my year was up, I kind of fell into the position I'm in now, just because of how passionate I am about prevention.
Was that something you thought about doing before moving here?
Not even a little bit. It was lived experience mixed with kind of the perfect storm of just ending up in an organization that spoke to my lived experience.
Oh, wow. Jenny, same question to you. How did you get into this work?
Yeah, I was kind of born into it. I come from a family that has mental health and substance use issues, and then came across a lot of social workers in my upbringing, and it kind of kept calling me, I would say. And so then when I kind of decided that it was time for a career, I went to grad school for social work and decided to go the mental health route.
I'm curious, when you go to grad school for something like that and jump into the career you're in, has anything surprised you, I guess, that you didn't expect when you chose that path versus now having done it and experienced it?
Yeah, I would say, I've always kind of considered myself a helper. And now that I'm a mental health therapist, I've realized that there's many ways that you can help people. If you're considering like social work or counseling, that's great. But even if you're not in that field, you can still make a big impact on people's lives. Mm.
And as a reminder, listeners, you are also, in a way, one of our guests for Off the Record. You can always call in with a question or comment, 970-728-4333. Again, 970-728-4333. Or if you are phone shy, I know some of you out there are phone shy, you can give us an email at news@koto.org with a question or a comment, and we will try and get that on air. Corinne and Jenny, I want to ask both of you, how do each of you define mental health? Because I actually will be honest, I sometimes have a bit of qualms with the term. When people say we need to keep up our mental health, I think it's so broad. And I feel like, you know, we don't say, I mean, maybe we say physical health, but I feel like we're more specific when it comes to physical health. And then in some ways, I almost find the vagueness of the term mental health exasperating in certain ways. I guess I'm curious for both of you, how you define this thing that's so important.
Yeah, I would say for me personally, I have a difference between mental health and mental illness, just like physical health and a physical illness are separated, where everyone has mental health, right? We all, you know, have the ups and downs of life, but some of us suffer from a mental illness. Like for example, you know, full off the record here, I struggle from PTSD and anxiety and depression with that. So that's my mental illness, but everyone has mental health that they need to make sure that they're taken care of, just like their physical health. So I agree with you that the term can be a little bit jarring, but I think it's more of an advocacy thing at this point, where we're all like cool with the physical health thing, but we're not there with the mental health thing yet. So I think that's the term that has been used to kind of push making sure there's an equality aspect of those two topics.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Corinne. You kind of took the words out of my mouth, like mental health versus mental illness. And then I think it is important, like what terms you use, right? Because it's so pertinent that we help destigmatize this. Mm-hmm. And I work in the jail here, and sometimes they ask the inmates, like, oh, do you want to meet with mental health today? And I'm sort of like, no, they're probably not going to say yes, right, to that. Versus, you know, if you're just working on your health, or if you need help with something, it can be, I think, a lot more broad than that. And yeah, where is the line between our mind and our body too, right? Because if you're not sleeping enough, that can affect your mental health. And then if you're depressed, that can affect your physical health. So really, I think it's just sort of like health and wellness and illness, and they're all sort of interplaying with each other all at once.
When you bring up this idea of this mind-body connection, Jenny, it makes me think, like, maybe when I think of like physical health, I think maybe there's some assumptions like these are more objective things, like, you know, your tissue is messed up, so there's this thing that will happen because of that, and people are just, it's easier maybe to accept that. But with mental health, I feel like sometimes people maybe see it as more malleable and less important because of that malleability. Whereas, I mean, you know, you're saying like there is this connection between the mental and the physical. It's not really as binary as maybe even my language is making it seem. And that, you know, seeing it as more essential and objective is important.
Yeah. And as social workers, we take like a person and environment lens too. So it's not just about you, right? It's about your environment. How healthy is the water that you're drinking? You know, how many liquor stores are in the town that you live in? You know, all of these things kind of play a factor into your mental health.
Corinne, I'm curious with you, with the work that you do interacting with members of our community. I mean, you both interact with a lot of members of our community. What are, I guess, some misconceptions maybe you think people have about mental health, about maintaining mental health?
I think about this a lot, Matt, and I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that people aren't struggling and that people don't want to talk about it. Just with my role in Tri-County, and I'm, you know, not a clinician. I don't have, you know, grad school degree or anything like that, but I have people reaching out to me all the time wanting to talk about whatever's going on, whatever sadness they're holding, and just how difficult it is living in a mountain town. So I think that's one aspect, is just how many people are affected. And then another is that because you live in a mountain town, everything's okay, and that you shouldn't have these struggles, and you're so lucky to live here. So whatever mental illness or mental struggle you're going through is kind of devalued because of that. So those are two really big things that I've noticed in my line of work.
I'm curious, does that vibe with what you've experienced, Jenny, with the people you work with?
I would say that, and I would also share that why I like working in this community versus, you know, many of the other mountain towns that I've worked in or could work in, is that I think the people here do recognize that, probably not so much the tourists, but, you know, the fact that we passed that mill levy to increase services, and then you know.
That was the 2018.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ballot measure 1A.
Yeah, and I know you work with a lot of those funds, Corinne. Mm-hmm. But I would say yes to everything that Corinne said, but also probably in part due to your organization, like there is more awareness here that it is difficult and something needs to be done about it.
Mm. I mean, it's such a balancing act because you do have, like you mentioned, I mean, there is such an increased awareness here. I mean, I was later in the hour, we're actually going to be chatting with Henry Mitchell, who's the emergency manager and works with the Mental Health First Responder Program with the Sheriff's Department. And I remember I was chatting or emailing with another reporter in a different Colorado community. And he was talking about, you know, we're going to having this first responder mental health program coming up. And, you know, we were saying, oh, we've had that in San Miguel County for quite a while now. And he was like, oh, I thought our county was so progressive. But it's, I mean, you know, like our county, we just have these amazing resources. And then it's also like Corinne said, I mean, it's balancing, I guess, all the resources with also, I don't know, sometimes abundance, I guess, can make things even more challenging. And I guess I am curious, you know, for both of you, I guess, what does make mental health unique in our region as both, you know, a good thing and a bad thing, I suppose, just from both of your experiences?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, like as a clinician, we look at protective factors and risk factors. So there's definitely more protective factors here with people having outdoor interests, having hobbies. But then, you know, there can be more risk factors too, like isolation and lack of housing. And so, which I think does make it kind of harder to say when you are having a difficult time, right? Because I love that you brought up that, like, if you're lucky enough to live in the mountains, you're lucky enough kind of attitude. Because there definitely can be some things that are not only left to be desired, but are very much needed for our basic human needs that people do without here.
Mm. Yeah, and to piggyback off that too, I think the good and the bad is just kind of the natural world we have, where if you're using it really intentionally, like this is good for my mental health or this makes me happy or whatever it is, then that's an amazing part of being here. But then if you're hiding behind those amazing things that we have to devalue what you're feeling, then that's the negative too. So just making sure that we're grateful for the outdoors and whatever resources and things like that, but to an extent, and realizing when you do need help beyond, you know, just going skiing or something like that.
That's such an interesting idea, living or enjoying the blessings we have intentionally.
Yes.
That is something, I mean, even I, you know, I succumb to it and I do it and then I'm like, oh, I feel like this isn't the best. In the sense of like, I feel like sometimes living here, I almost use the surroundings as, well, I don't want to say a crutch, but just as a support for like a sense of identity or personality, thinking, you know, part of, you know, who I am right now is living in this amazing place, mm-hmm. which is a wonderful thing, I feel like. But also sometimes I feel that doing that, like isn't sustainable, I guess, like having a significant chunk of a feeling of who I am being defined by these external things that aren't really in my control. And that, you know, I mean, I don't know, if I lost housing, I probably would have to leave. And mm-hmm. that would just be a very bad situation to be in, to be someone feeling defined by these things that can slip away so easily.
Right. Yeah, it's great until it's not, right? So it's something that, you know, a lot of us base our identities on, but just making sure that we're doing it intentionally and not just because it's there, making sure that, you know, you are actively paying attention to how it's affecting you and your mental health, and making sure that you're doing it for those positive reasons and not just because you have to, because you live here, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Listeners, as a reminder, if anything we're saying is vibing with you, give us a call, 970-728-4333 with any questions or comments. You can also send an email to news@koto.org. Jenny, you brought up something interesting in terms of these ideas of how the environment also interacts with mental health, like water quality, very, very literal environmental factors.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm curious how you, when you're working with clients and patients, and like how you think about the idea of how much of our mental health is something we can control and how much is something out of our control, and how to, I guess, balance both of those things. Because I think both of those ideas can bring pros and cons.
Yeah. Well, I kind of smiled looking at Corinne because, I don't know. I feel like you and I are sharing a brain right now. This is great.
Means we're on the right track.
But, well, first of all, as a counselor, you know, I work with a lot of people with anxiety. And something we focus on is what can you control, right? And so I would sort of start there. But then, you know, what's great about organizations like Corinne's is they sort of take more of that public health model. So I work more on like that one-to-one basis, like, okay, you know, what's in your control? What can you do to address these things? And then knowing that there's organizations out there too that are trying to amplify the resources that we have in the community to address those environmental and social factors, that when you're, you know, living in Telluride and working two jobs and then skiing on maybe your one day off or whatever, you know that there's people advocating for you in both of those areas.
I'm always very struck when it comes to, I mean, from my own personal experience with mental health, you know, I like how powerful mindsets have been, or just like things in the external world don't necessarily change, but talking to someone who suggests just a different way to think about the objective factors in life, I don't know, it's always very surprising to me how, I mean, I don't know if effective is the word, because it, I mean, I feel like when it comes to mental health, it's like sand through a sieve, like you get it and then it goes away, so you have to put more back in, kind of a thing. Like there's no permanent quick fixes. But like, I don't know, I'm always just struck that the world can seem a certain way and the world doesn't change, but just changing how you see the world sometimes is very helpful.
And I think you said that beautifully, where I even, like, I'm in this field and, you know, you'd think I would have everything down by now, but I see my therapist and every time I see her, I leave just feeling rejuvenated. I'm like, how did this human give me these amazing resources to make everything, not everything better, but to give me the empowerment to work towards bettering myself in whatever aspect we decided that week. So I think that's another beautiful thing about taking care of yourself and that mental health. And it doesn't need to be a crisis scenario for you to ask for help from someone like Jenny or any other clinician we have at our disposal. So I think that's a really important point.
This is not me saying that music is a substitute for a therapist. It's not. But one other, I think music can do that same thing you said, where you hear a song and it just makes you feel better.
Absolutely.
And we know that very well on Kodo. We asked all of our guests to select a song that they just, I don't know, makes them feel good. They like to listen to maybe when they're down. Music, I just think is a very magical sort of medicine at the right time and place, I would say. So we are going to play some of those songs throughout the hour. And Jenny, actually, one of the songs you suggested was the Jerry Garcia cover of Dear Prudence.
Yes.
Do you want to say anything about why you chose that?
Yeah. That song is just very soothing to me. And it also kind of gives me like a sense of belonging. And yeah, I just, it sort of calms me down and sort of reassures me that I have my place in things.
I like the way you said that. Well, anyway, here is the Jerry Garcia cover of Dear Prudence. We will be back after this song. This is Off the Record.
Dear Prudence,
are back. We're actually getting a call. Let's bring him up. Hello, you're live on Kodo.
Hi, I'm live. Okay. I just tuned in about 15 minutes ago, and I'm enjoying Off the Record. And I didn't know if you guys had started talking a bit about kind of the really powerful question when people are down and if they've ever thought about not being here or taking their lives.
No, we hadn't talked about that, and I'm really glad that you brought it up. So do you just kind of chatting about asking someone if they're thinking of taking their own life, is that kind of what you're hoping we can talk about?
Yeah, I was hoping maybe you guys could touch on that if you haven't yet.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the call.
Thanks.
Bye.
Mike, I love that a community member asked that question. So the answer, and Jenny, you can back me up on this or, you know, go against me if you need to, but what we always teach people in our suicide prevention trainings is to ask directly if you think that suicide might be in the conversation, to maybe use some I statements of why you're worried about that person. Like, you know, Jenny, I notice you're doing X, Y, and Z. And sometimes when people are doing X, Y, and Z, they might be thinking of suicide. Are you thinking of suicide or are you thinking of killing yourself? Those are the two questions, because if you say, you know, you're not thinking of doing something crazy, are you? You're not thinking of hurting yourself. Those can mean many different things. And the question you want to know the answer to is, are you thinking of ending your life? So making sure you're very clear with, are you thinking of suicide or are you thinking of killing yourself?
Yeah, I think exactly like Corinne said, just being really frank. But I also think sometimes people are scared to ask that question because then it's like, well, what if the person says yes? Right, then what do I do? And you know, we do have a co-responder program here in San Miguel County, so you can call in like a welfare check. You can, you know, if that person has a therapist or if you're, you know, near to the Center for Mental Health or the clinic or some sort of mandatory reporter who's better trained in safety planning, that would be kind of the next step, just to make sure if that person does say yes, that they're safe, you know.
Do you have that phone number, Jenny, a good place for folks to call if they're worried about someone that they know?
Yeah, so our crisis line is 970-252-2550. And no, I'm sorry. It's 970-252-6220. And, you know, if we get a call, then we're connected with the local co-responders as well. And, you know, what I like to tell people as a clinician, too, is I just have to make sure you're safe, you know, and I think it's important to sort of normalize those thoughts because a lot of people do have them, you know, and so I'll even sometimes say, like, you know, when's the last time you thought about suicide? You know, because then the assumption is that you've thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying with your phrasing, you know, if you ask someone, like, you're not thinking about suicide, are you? The chances of them saying yes are probably lower.
Right.
Right. So just doing it in a way that opens the door for them to talk about it and then taking that next step to make sure that they're safe.
Mm. You mentioned this idea of opening a door, I guess. And I do kind of maybe even just want to broaden the question. I mean, what are good ways that both of you have found for just talking about mental health in general? I mean, you know, I think you can obviously talk about these things when it's not as dire as worried about a friend committing suicide, of a friend taking their life.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess what have you found for just better, just ways to, I don't know, check in about these things, talk about these things and maybe de-escalate them before they get to an even scarier place.
So I'll do a quick plug for some of the trainings that I give. We offer mental health first aid and safe talk suicide alertness trainings. So especially that safe talk training, we really practice having the conversations and asking the questions and the follow-up of what to do next, what resources you can follow up to. But then that mental health first aid class really opens up that conversation about mental health and has really kind of destigmatized the topic for people who have taken the course. And for example, so I'm going to go back. This is the advocacy in me. So like the language we use, like you said earlier. So like we try really hard not to say committed suicide. We try to say died by suicide. So stuff like that. So just learning how to destigmatize these issues within those trainings. It's kind of how Tri-County tackles that question.
Yeah, and we offer trainings as well. So we have a website, centermh.org, and we also have a Facebook page. And so I think the first Thursday of every month we do sort of like a brief suicide training for people like the woman who called in, who, you know, want herself and other people to feel comfortable asking those questions. And then, yeah, I think just talking about it. I think sometimes we can get in our heads about like what's the right or the wrong way to say things. And I think just being willing to like get in the weeds and know that there's like professional help out there if you've kind of backed yourself into a corner where you don't know where to go.
What if someone's worried that talking about these issues could make it worse for the person they're worried about?
We always talk about that in our training, so I'm glad you are bringing up these myths. So that's a myth, right? Like, humans are not that impressionable. People have, whether you've actually been actively suicidal or not, people know what suicide is. So me saying, hey, Jenny, are you thinking of suicide or are you depressed or whatever? I'm not going to make Jenny depressed or I'm not going to make Jenny, you know, act on any suicidal thoughts that she's having. So it's really just making sure that you have that mindset of you might be the first person that's ever asked. You might be the first person that's ever talked to this person about their mental health. And that can be a relief. Even if they are suicidal and they say yes, might be the first time that they've had that conversation. That's really, really powerful. Just making sure that everyone knows that talking about mental health does not make someone's mental health worse. Mm-hmm. Just like me being like, hey, Jenny, does your leg hurt? If she has a broken leg, it's not going to break it more. So just talking about it is only going to make things better.
Mm. I really like, Corinne, earlier you mentioned, you know, this idea of practicing, asking these questions. And I think that's a very potent reframing of thinking of these things as things to practice, mm-hmm. and not things that, you know, you're good at or bad at, but just things that you need to practice.
Definitely.
I'm also curious for both of you on this topic of talking about these things and maybe just sustaining our own mental health. I mean, what are things that both of you do when it comes to maintaining mental health in the place we live in? I guess what does it look like from your perspective to maintain, to live, to cultivate a mentally healthy life?
Yeah, so I go to therapy too. Therapists need therapists, and shout out to my fellow healthcare workers and frontline workers out there. And yeah, spending time with friends. I think just enjoying my life, because if I'm trying to help people get better and then I'm not doing that myself, that's sort of like an incongruent thing, right? So for me, it's a way to sort of reap what I sow. And so I'm just going to like community events where people are fulfilling their potential and getting to see that fellow humanity, and helps me do my work, because that's what I aim for with myself and my clients.
Yeah, and just to piggyback off that again, I also see a therapist, and I freaking love my therapist. Shout out to my therapist. If you're listening to this, you're amazing.
Great shirt, by the way. I freaking love my therapist.
Oh my God, right? They're great. I keep like almost buying one. But yeah, my therapist is amazing. And then just also setting boundaries for yourself. So like when I'm at work, what's my role? When I'm a friend, what's my role? When I'm just walking down the street getting coffee, what's my role? And making sure that I'm not taking other people's stuff on too much, because that can become too much for any one person. So setting those boundaries, and then also just being really upfront about my own mental health so that way other people can do it. And then also, like, I can feel true joy then. If I'm being super honest about, you know, today sucks, or I'm really struggling with, you know, this traumatic thought that I had from my past. If I don't acknowledge that, then when joy is actually there, I'm not able to let it in. So making sure that you are taking in moments for what they are, and if they're hard, they're hard, and that's okay. But then that way, when they are joyous moments, you can really, really open your heart up to them.
Mm. I've been thinking a lot about this book that I want to read. I haven't been able to get a copy of it yet, but I heard about it. It's a book called it's called Wintering, and it's by this author Catherine May, and she has this idea that people have they have winters, like life is cyclical, seasonal, and that there's these periods, winters, where, you know, you might feel isolated or alone, maybe dormant, sort of hibernating, and kind of thinking of those periods often as hard periods, but also as times of like personal transformation, often can happen in those challenging times. And I guess, I don't know, this idea of like life being cyclical has always been very appealing to me, and thinking that, you know, bad times and good, like there's, it's not like a linear progression, like it's not going to always get better or always get worse kind of a thing. It's always been potent to me. I'm also curious for both of you, you know, big picture question here, but for each of you, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing in our community to improve mental health, what would that change be? No limits, no monetary limits, just whatever. Corinne, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, luckily you gave me this ahead of time, so because I would have been
giving away the secret.
I would have been like so confused, but no, I think I really feel like this, and I actually talked to my therapist about this today, where I wish that I could work myself out of a job where we don't need to give mental health trainings. We don't need to advocate. We don't need to educate. It's just intertwined into daily life where, like, we don't need to educate, you know, the average educated human to go to the doctor every year, go to the dentist every year. But for some reason, we still have to have these positions and these, like, big advocacy pushes for mental health, which, you know, is exhausting for everyone, because people are like, stop talking to me about mental health. And I'm like, I don't want to talk about mental health. I want you just to get it. So if I could wave a magic wand, it would just be for everyone to get it and get how important it is for every single human to maintain their mental health.
No holds barred. I like thinking big. I like it.
Yeah.
Jenny, your magic wand action.
Yeah, I've got to say, like, first step would have to be more screenings. Like, I think with COVID, right, you go somewhere, they take your temperature. We're in a pandemic. We're also in an opioid pandemic. We're in a housing crisis where you have, you know, multiple mental and substance use issues facing our town and our nation right now. And I think if we can meet people at the door and say, hey, is this affecting you? And then providing them treatment, we would be able to address those things rather than waiting for people to get services. You know, like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I've been depressed my whole life and I'm 65 and I'm finally going to go to therapy. Wouldn't it be nice if, like, at kindergarten, that person got screened and got help? So I would say more screenings.
One of the things I always like when going to therapy is, you know, starting off with, like, I don't know, I feel like there's often like questionnaires, like, you know, how are you feeling on these different metrics? And I really like liking that ritual. And also, like, it's nice to have, you know, if you do a thing every week or every 2 weeks, like having like these weekly things where you kind of remember, like, this was what I said 2 weeks ago and how am I feeling now? And it's like nice having those like check-ins and landmarks. Well, what, on the topic of, you know, things to do, Jenny, I asked you if you'd be willing to lead a bit of a brief guided meditation as part of this, something that I know I personally have found value in, and hopefully some of our listeners will as well, but was hoping you would be able to do that briefly.
Absolutely, yeah. So I selected a loving kindness meditation. It's a practice that I think our community could use right now, and I got a script because I want people to be able to find it. And so I got the script off of Palouse Mindfulness. That's spelled P-A-L-O-U-S-E. You can just Google it and you'll see. There's a recording there so you can listen to it. And Matt and Corinne, I want you guys to to do it with me here in the studio.
If you're driving, no need to do it if you're driving.
Well, that you can do this meditation with your eyes open. So, yeah, you can leave your eyes open or eyes shut, whatever is most comfortable for you. It can be done in any position. And just begins by taking a moment to be aware of any thoughts or feelings you may be experiencing right now. Acknowledging how things are for you right now. And when you are ready, beginning to bring awareness to body. Feeling your feet, legs, hips, lower and upper body, arms, shoulders, neck, head. Beginning to feel the movement of your breath, the actual sensations of breathing, reminding yourself that you are here, alive, whole. When you're ready, you might bring to mind the image of a person who you know or you've known in your life to be loving and kind to you. Someone who easily evokes feelings of warmth and love. It could be a spouse or partner, parent or family member, a mentor or close friend. Someone who has been good to you, helps you feel safe and whole, whose caring easily emanates from them to you. And if a person, past or present, doesn't come to mind, maybe someone who you know to be inspirational may come. Someone it is easy to imagine sending wishes of well-being to, wishing them well, and if it feels right, imagining saying to them, may you be happy, healthy, and whole. May you have love, warmth, and affection. May you be protected from harm and free from fear. May you be alive, engaged, and joyful. May you experience inner peace and ease. You may have your own words and wishes for them, so feel free to use words that resonate with you. Taking a few minutes now to feel how it is to wish these things for them, letting yourself have the sense of the wishes for well-being emanating from you to them, connecting you to them. Noticing how it feels inside you as you send these wishes of well-being to this person you love or care about. You could even imagine extending these wishes to include the animals and plants, all life on our planet and beyond, including ourselves, saying, may we all be happy and healthy. May we all be safe and protected. May we all live together in peace, ease, and happiness. And now as this loving kindness meditation comes to an end, taking time to appreciate and feel what's been generated through this practice. And even if there have been difficult parts of this practice, knowing that this practice has the potential to increase your sense of aliveness, of connection, and of belonging. And when you are ready, letting yourself feel again your physical presence, sensations of your body, feet, seat, upper torso, neck and head, beginning to notice the movement of your own breath, bringing aliveness and nourishment to your body as a whole, just as your wishes of goodwill will bring aliveness and nourishment to those around you.
Thank you so much, Jenny.
Thank you.
As we bring this segment to a close, I really briefly want to ask both of you, Corinne and Jenny, if there are just any closing thoughts that you would like to share. Corinne, we can start with you.
My closing thoughts are just to know what resources are available to you. Tri-County Health Network has a bunch of different resources, whether that be trainings, teletherapy, all that good stuff. We have a behavioral health resource guide where if you want to find clinicians in the area or support groups or anything like that, you can go there. That website is tchnetworkdirectory.org. And I also want to plug the San Miguel Behavioral Health Solutions panel. That panel, as we mentioned earlier, directs the funds that were passed by that mill levy. So they have actually made it a priority to be able to help people pay for therapy if they are struggling paying for services. So if you need help paying for therapy services, please visit sanmiguelbehavioralhealth.org.
Yeah, and through the Center for Mental Health, we do have same-day access available. So if you're wanting to get into therapy tonight, you can call us tomorrow and get in with a clinician the same day. And I also want to mention, we do have a virtual intensive outpatient program for substance use treatment, which is great because a lot of people have to leave the area in order to obtain the services. So you can do that from the comfort of your own home. And yeah, just that crisis line again is 970-252-6220 if you or someone you know is in crisis.
I just really quickly want to underline, Corinne, I think it's incredible that our county has funds available where literally if cost is a barrier, you can access. It's like, I think it's like $1,500 per, it's a lot of money you can access.
Yeah, there's actually, they've been kind of editing their, you know, guidelines for this, but pretty much anyone who needs it, there's no income limit, there's no anything like that. So if you need the help getting treatment or funds for therapy, it's there if you live or work in San Miguel County.
Still just astonishing. One more number I'll throw out there is the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. That number, 1-800-273-8255, 1-800-273-8255, available 24 hours in English and Spanish. Once again, I really want to give a big thank you to Corinne Cavender, Behavioral Health Operations Coordinator with Tri-County Health Network, and Jenny Wheeler, a licensed clinical social worker with the Center for Mental Health. I just am so glad we were able to get both of you on, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you, Corinne.
Yeah, thank you both, and thanks for bringing attention to this topic.
Listeners, we are not done yet. Stay tuned. We are going to be joined by Henry Mitchell in just a bit to chat about some other work our county is doing on the mental health front. And to fill the space between, we will now play Corinne's song, Rivers and Roads, by the Head and the Heart. So here we go. Stay tuned.
From now, we'll all be gone. All our friends will move away, and they're going to better places, but our friends will be gone away. Nothing is as it has been, and I miss your face like hell. And I guess it's just as well, but I miss your face like hell. Talking about the way things change, and my family lives in a different state. And if you don't know what to make of this, then we will not relate. So if you don't know what to make of this, then we will not relate. Oh,
And we are back. If you're just tuning in, this is Off the Record. I am Matt Hoisch. Tonight we are chatting about mental health, something that's always important in our region, and that we should always be thinking about and talking about. And actually, as we're coming up, we have a caller, so we're going to bring them up real quickly. Hello, you're live on Kodo.
Hi. A couple things on the highway. The mountain sheep, the Rocky Mountain sheep, are out, and they're split on the highway just below Saw Pit before... just above Saw Pit after Silver Pick.
Amazing.
And there's somebody's old white shepherd walking around the highway at Saw Pit. He's walking back and forth from the store, and he's in the road. Oh. Very hard to see him with the sun going down.
Okay.
Big old male white shepherd looking dog.
Thank you so much for those red alerts. One more time, can you reiterate where those animals are?
Yep. The sheep are... just below Silver Pick, way before you get to Saw Pit, and they were split on the road. Some were up on the hill, and the others were down on the riverside. And then the old white shepherd is cruising around, going back and forth in Saw Pit. Old white shepherd male walking around, and he's walking out on the highway.
Gotcha. All right, thank you so much for the call and for keeping our drivers aware and safe.
Thanks. You too. Have a good night.
Bye. All right. We are now joined in studio for the next bit of our mental health program by Henry Mitchell, the San Miguel County Emergency Manager. And his voice may also be familiar. He is also the host on these hallowed airwaves of Black Caesar's Cosmic Grab Bag. Henry, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Matt. Thank you.
Henry, one of the big reasons I wanted to have you on, we mentioned this earlier in the hour, was that our county has a core program, a co-responder program, and I'm really, I would just love if you could just briefly explain what that program is and just give us all the background on a pretty impressive program our county has.
Yeah, certainly. So the core responder program is a program that is out of the sheriff's office, and we have noticed over many, many years that many of the calls that some of the deputies were getting, and some of the law enforcement officers were getting, even here in town and in Norwood and across the county, were really kind of social services based, or they had just a need. They're the person in crisis in need of some kind of support, and you know, law enforcement officers aren't necessarily trained to respond to those types of calls. So we saw the need to get some mental health support out on call 24/7 and to send them out to those particular calls to help those folks who were in crisis, who maybe didn't need the presence or didn't need a deputy or a law enforcement officer there to respond to them, but they just needed some sort of support, whether it is you know, someone just in general crisis, or whether it's someone who is, you know, heavily intoxicated or anything like that. So that's the basis of that program, is really replacing those law enforcement officers in certain calls where they're not necessarily needed and they're not trained to do that type of stuff.
Mm. And the program's been around for a little bit more than a year, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, about a year.
Yeah, I know it was funded in part by that 2018 mill levy that the region passed. And I guess I'm curious, and you know, the year or so that it's been active, I mean, what have you all seen in terms of its success and how these co-responders have impacted mental health responses in our region?
So initially, I think that, you know, getting the word out was a bit of a challenge. It is a newer idea here for our region and for our county. Certain other counties and other places, they've had these programs in position for a while. But for us, it was something brand new. And actually getting the word out that, you know, this is something that you could call 911 and ask for, whether you are a staff member at TMC at the medical center dealing with an issue, or, you know, whether you're, you know, someone who is a bar owner or anything like that. I think getting that word out initially was a bit of a challenge, but it's starting to roll now. And we're starting to see some pretty good traction. You know, we still have some work to do as far as, like I said, PR and PIO stuff. But I think that, you know, things are coming along.
And what does it mean for people on the ground? If someone calls 911 and says, can you send one of the co-responders to come? I guess
what do you all do on the ground? What does that program look like, and what kind of help can people get from these co-responders?
So it is a number of different folks who work for CORE and who are on call 24/7. And when a person calls 911, they'll ask for a CORE responder, or they will just generally give the situation to the dispatcher. And then from that point, the dispatcher can say, oh, well, this isn't necessarily a law enforcement call. This is a CORE call. And then sometimes even law enforcement officers will make that call once they either receive the information or get on scene. And, you know, they'll say, you know, this is not something that, you know, we are going to deal with. So we either get a call via radio. We all have radios, or phone. And we, you know, wherever we are, we just pick up. And once we get all the information from dispatch, pick up and go. And whatever type of support is needed, we'll provide it once we're there on scene. So if we need to just speak to someone who is in the middle of a crisis, that's fine. If we need to diagnose a situation where someone may have been overserved or there's some substance use issues, then we'll deal with that when it comes up. But like I said, we're positioned all across the county and 24/7.
What are some of the, I'm curious, you know, being on the ground and being the people that people call when they really are in crisis, you know, we've had a particularly challenging year, as has everyone. And I'm curious from your perspective with this program and the work that you all at the county are doing, I guess, well, have you noticed any trends in terms of things you're seeing in the region, mental health challenges, or just the state of how people in some sense are feeling right now?
Yeah. So I've seen, a portion of the calls that I personally have received have been substance use issues, folks who really have dipped too far into whatever substance they're into. And, you know, that happens from time to time. And, you know, with our community here, we are a mountain community in Ski Town. And so I think that's been known to happen here. But I have seen an uptick in that as far as those calls. And then other calls I've seen generally have been, you know, mostly folks I see ripples, I guess, from kind of the societal anxiety, if you will, from the pandemic and just everything compounding. Folks being depressed and experiencing a sort of sadness, and then, you know, showing that, and then someone, you know, gives a call because of that, and that's typically based on not necessarily lifestyle choices, but folks having difficulties just making it here. Sometimes it can be difficult for folks, for, you know, the folks who are out doing the things, who make our town run, who are, you know, serving the drinks, who were, you know, shoveling snow, who were doing whatever. For those folks, sometimes it does seem to have been pretty hard this year.
I know you wear a lot of hats in our region, Henry, and as part of your job, you know, our emergency manager, you're also in charge of our COVID recovery, which is different from response, less, you know, immediate, more long-term thinking. And as you're thinking about COVID recovery, I think that we're all maybe starting to see some sort of a light at the end of the pandemic tunnel. But that doesn't mean the effects of COVID are done. And I'm curious, how are you thinking about these mental health issues, thinking about over the next several months or even years, helping our community process the trauma and the challenges of the last year?
Absolutely. So on that note, you know, recovery is a team. It's a group effort. I'm not necessarily in charge of it or anything like that. It's definitely a strong group from the county. And then on the mental health piece, I think that we need to, number one, help folks recognize that it's going to be a long road. You know, when we look at crisis and, you know, folks who are impacted by trauma, for, you know, fire, for instance, they say that, you know, you'll be impacted by that for a number of years, you know, starting 6 months later, but a number of years. But we've had this really prolonged traumatic incident, which we'll just call it, that's impacted us day by day by day, and pretty much in every single facet of our life. When we wake up, whether we can leave the house or not, whether we, you know, go to the store and see everyone in masks, that's pretty traumatic as well. We just have to admit those things and then really recognize it's going to be a long road. And I think also recognize that we can help each other and we can point out each other's strengths and how resilient we are as a community. And I think that, you know, that long road is really gonna, it's gonna help us if we help each other.
I don't know if this is something you've seen or felt or sensed. I mean, one thing I've sensed is throughout the pandemic, it was like, I personally felt that I could justify any challenge I had by saying it's a pandemic and life is harder and that kind of helped me become okay with it. And I have had this sense, you know, things are lightening up. And even for me personally, like, it's harder to say, oh, I'm not doing things right now. And it's harder to say it's a pandemic because now the pandemic is lightening up and there's like an expectation to be doing things. And it is this sense I've had of like, it's the pandemic will still be impacting our lives. And maybe we won't want to attribute things to the pandemic, even though, like you're saying, I mean, there are going to be ripple effects for years.
Yeah, for a number of years. And, you know, I did the same thing and just kind of rationalizing, well, I'm not doing X, Y, or Z that I want to do or need to do or should be doing, whether, you know, generally it's like social stuff, because it's a pandemic. But the pandemic is lightening up, but, you know, we still do need to understand that it's still here and it's not over yet. And we have to admit people are tired. They are so tired. And we have to, you know, recognize that. But, you know, things are starting to loosen up. With our levels in the county and what's allowed and folks are getting vaccinated and this and that, and it's super exciting. So, you know, it's been a long road and it's going to be a little bit longer. We just have to help each other out and hang on in there and do what we can, because we can do some more things now and recognize that.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Corinne and Jenny. If you had a magic wand and you can change one thing in the region, no limits, money or anything, but one thing that will improve mental health in our region, I'm curious what you would change.
The one thing that I would change, if I had a magic wand or, you know, something at the end of a rainbow, it would be make housing not an issue. So, you know, overdo it when it comes to affordable housing. Have a glut of places where, you know, we don't have enough people to put apartments in, put in these apartments. I think that, you know, we're really seeing those ripple effects of the stress of folks maybe being out of work. And then, you know, we've always had a housing crisis, but it's really been compounded now with this pandemic. And if I had a magic wand and had however much, you know, bottomless pit, Uncle Scrooge type money, Scrooge McDuck type money, right? I would have 4 or 5 whole blocks of homes just for rentals for the folks who make this community work.
An important reminder, like Jenny was saying earlier, like you're saying, I mean, there's such a connection between mental health and the environment you're in. It's not just an individual thing. I mean, our mental health relies on our communal health.
It does. It does.
We are almost out of time. And so as we really close this hour, close our segment with you, Henry, I just want to ask, are there any closing thoughts that you want to share with our listeners?
Certainly. So along with the resources that were pointed out before with Jenny and Corinne, I want you to go ahead and take note of those. But then also, you know, if you are in immediate crisis, like right here, right now, and you're feeling like you need some support, you can call 911 and ask for a core responder. Also, if you are a manager at a hotel or, you know, a business owner and you see someone in crisis who really needs some help, you can call 911. We're just, you know, everyone knows the number, 911, ask for a core responder. We're out here, we're 24/7. We're willing to give support. Like I tell pretty much all of the folks that I respond to, you know, folks called us because they care. People care about you, all right?
It's a really great way to think of it and to frame it. And I'll reiterate that number that Jenny put out. It was 970-252-6220. And Corinne also directed folks to the Tri-County Health Network website for a ton of resources. There's a lot of resources out there. And I think, like Henry is saying, there's a lot of people out there also to help navigate those resources, because even that navigating those is a bit daunting as well. So I think the number one message is, reach out, talk to someone, and gosh, anyone living here, we are not alone. And it's hard to remember that sometimes. There's a lot of people here. Listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. This is such an important topic and something we will certainly continue to talk about here on KOTO. I know that the community, the Kodo community, has been something that has helped me stay mentally healthy this past year. I can say that unequivocally, and I'm so grateful to all of you. Very grateful to you, Henry, and just all the people that support our Kodo community, our Telluride community, and everyone else out there. Really, really appreciate it. Go tell someone that they're meaningful to you. Go tell someone that you love them, that they are a meaningful person in your life. I think that is something else we've taken from tonight. Mm-hmm. It is never too soon to say those words. And Henry, we are going to go out with your song. As I mentioned, we asked everyone for a song that they like, that makes them feel good, or just, I don't know, they listen to when they need it. You suggested, I really like this, Henry. The song you suggested is called Line 5 by an artist named Kutimon. Am I pronouncing that right?
Absolutely.
Briefly, why'd you choose it?
So this is the fifth track from a 5-track album. It's got horns, it's got energy, it makes me happy, it makes me want to get up and dance, and whenever I'm traveling, whenever I like land on the plane, you know, this is what I play, like, hey, welcome to this place, let's go have some fun.
Welcome to this place, let's go have some fun. Have a good night, Kodo listeners.